Hi, this is Sebastian. You might know my mom, Heather, from Shine.fm. This is the Shine.fm Momcast. Take it away, Mom.
Thanks so much for joining us on the Momcast today. I'm sitting down with a mom of four, Rachel Smith. Rachel, you live in the Lansing, Michigan area. And tell me your kids, because you have four, but really we're going to specifically talk about Dawson today.
Yeah, so I have four kids. My oldest is almost a teenager. And then I have my second, who is going to be 11 the end of this year, and then a daughter who just turned 9, and then my baby, who is almost 7 years old.
And that's Dawson. Yep. And that's what we're going to focus on today. I really want to talk about misconceptions and some things that people maybe don't know about type 1 diabetes. So tell us Dawson's story and how you guys as a family figured out that he is type 1.
Okay, so in 2016, it was right after Easter, and we noticed that he was really thirsty, but it didn't really strike me as anything out of the ordinary. We were going somewhere, and he had asked me to stop and get him something to drink, so I stopped at a gas station and bought him a beverage. We were literally less than a mile from our destination, and when we got there, he had already drank the whole entire bottle.
Wow.
So then he was using the bathroom a lot, which was to be expected after drinking so much fluid.
Right,
so I didn't
right.
think anything too concerning about that. And then a couple days later, he just was really tired and falling asleep in the afternoon. I didn't really chalk that up as to anything concerning either, but then he started wetting his pants. So he had gotten up from a nap and had wet his pants. So, you know, we got everything taken care of and went on with our day, and he was really whiny, but was still just, you know, his normal self. And I kind of considered that he may have been sick or coming down
right.
with something.
Right.
So then a couple days later, again, he was just acting really thirsty and wetting his pants again, needing to use the bathroom frequently. And so I started to just keep track of those occurrences. So I was keeping track of how much he was drinking and the number of times that he used the bathroom. And we had went to church on a Saturday night, so not quite 1 week after Easter. And he didn't want to go into the children's program, so I kept him with me. And he had fallen asleep during the church service with all the loud music.
Right,
and,
right.
I definitely knew something was wrong at that point. And so he had another accident. And the next day, I was very thankful. I was very blessed by the fact that we had a friend that also had diabetes. And so I had brought my concerns up to her. I have a brother that is type 1 also, so I knew some of the early warning signs, which is increased thirst and hunger, mm-hmm. and then, you know, needing to use the bathroom more. So I brought my concerns up to her, and she had encouraged me to check for ketones. And at that point, there was no – I didn't realize the significance of ketones. Like, they weren't anything that I – would have considered alarming,
right?
Because I didn't know,
right?
But he had moderate ketones, and so the ketones actually are really dangerous. That can be an indicator that he was in DKA, which is diabetic ketoacidosis. So when I told her that they were moderate, she was very concerned about checking his blood sugar and offered to do that for us.
Wow.
His blood sugar just read high on the meter, which means that it was over 600, and so at that point she was able to kind of give me an idea for what we could expect, that we should pack clothes and be prepared to stay at the hospital for several days, and encouraged us to go right away. So that Sunday, literally 1 week after Easter, is when we took him to the hospital and were diagnosed.
So you hear diabetes a lot. November is National Diabetes Awareness Month. We talked about that. And November 14th is National Diabetes Day. But there's different types of diabetes. And I think there's a lot of misconceptions about what is type 1. So explain what happened to Dawson and why type 1 is different than type 2.
Okay. So there are whenever I do training, this is something I always bring up, that everybody knows somebody with diabetes. Mm-hmm. But type 2 diabetes is the one that is more common. Type 1 diabetes is an autoimmune disease. So his immune system has attacked the beta cells that his pancreas produces, and they are what produce insulin. So his body basically over time, as the immune system was attacking, was creating less and less insulin. Mm. And as it got to a point where it was depleted or it was reduced greatly, his body just had no way of bringing his blood sugar down. Somebody with type 2 diabetes it's usually diagnosed later in life, although they're seeing more children diagnosed with type 2 now. But basically, it is where the body cannot use insulin properly, or it's not producing enough insulin. And that is not an autoimmune disease, but it is a metabolic disorder, which is why they both have that same name. And both of them would create a high blood sugar, but treatment is different. And usually, like I said, it's diagnosed later in life for most people.
Mm-hmm. Now, one of the things that you guys also deal with is that, and help me understand why this is specifically for Dawson, but you also have had to go gluten-free. And I know that when Dawson was first diagnosed, in my mind, I was like, oh, well, he can't have sugar now. And you were like, no, that's not the case. But you did have to come to a place where your family, for the most part, and Dawson specifically, and I know you do a lot of it too, has to go gluten-free. What's the correlation there between the gluten and the type 1 diabetes?
So when you're diagnosed with type 1 diabetes and possibly other autoimmune diseases, they do a screening for all autoimmune diseases that they typically see present with type 1. So he was screened also for autoimmune thyroid and also for celiac. And so when we received the diagnosis for type 1 and they checked for everything else, it came back positive for the antibodies or the autoantibodies for celiac disease. And so we started that whole process of getting the diagnosis, which was a little bit lengthy compared to the type 1. We had to have a scope done and had to have more blood work and just those confirmations. So we are gluten-free for him for celiac disease as well, and then continue to be screened for the thyroid because it's very common for it to show up with type 1 and celiac.
Okay, and let's address the whole, like, I didn't think he could have sugar thing.
Okay.
Because that was like, and you need to know that there have been times when Dawson has been at my house and I have taken care of him and had to, like, test him and that kind of thing. And so for me, this was a huge learning curve, but I think there's a lot of misconceptions out there about type 1 and how you treat it and what they can eat and how you just, how he's, I mean, he's 7. Mm-hmm. So the thought of not being able to have candy or sugar is kind of out of the question. Although I have to admit, and I'll let you answer the question here in a minute, but I am really impressed with how Dawson has, and maybe we'll talk about this in a little bit, really in a lot of ways embraced his type 1 and has understanding that maybe in your mind a 7-year-old shouldn't have, or you would rather he didn't have, of what his body can and cannot do and what he can and cannot have. But let's address the sugar. Why is it that I would think that he couldn't have sugar, but he can, and how do you treat that?
So I think that for most people who are diagnosed with type 2 diabetes, one of the first changes that they would make, especially if they're catching it early or it would be considered pre-diabetes, is that you would change your diet. And so the first thing would be you would cut back on your carbohydrate intake and specifically sugars. And so there's a whole market out there of sugar-free stuff that is designed and it started for people who had diabetes and needed to limit their sugar intake.
Right.
Now for type 1, and this wasn't always this way, it's kind of evolved over the years, but the directions for Dawson's care is that we wouldn't change anything, but we would just dose insulin for what we're feeding him. So Basically, we have ratios that we use. And so he gets a certain amount of insulin for however many carbohydrates he eats. And that's okay. not just sugar, it's any carbs. So mashed potatoes, those have carbs in them. And so those are something right. we would need to calculate how many carbs are in it so we can get a correct insulin dosage for what he's eating.
Okay.
There are so many misconceptions, and he... there are a lot of adults that say things like, you know, you can't have that, or they're explaining to their children that Dawson, you know, can't eat sugar. He avoids sugar, which, to be completely honest, is very false for him. He actually consumes a fair amount of sugar because that's what we use to treat low blood sugars.
Oh, okay.
So when we're using insulin therapy, it means that his body is more prone to a low blood sugar that could be dangerous. And the only way to correct that is to give him sugar okay. to counteract the low blood sugar. So we have carb counts for all of the candy that we use. We have to use a fast acting carbohydrate versus something that's slower. So he can't have chocolate to use for a low blood sugar, but we can use something like... Starburst or Smarties or something like that. And so we also, you know, calculate all of that out. So he gets a certain number grams of carbs to bring up low blood sugars. Mm-hmm. And then the rest of the time as he's consuming them, we would give insulin. Right now we're using a pump, but before we were using injections. And so just to minimize the number of injections he had, we would try to keep carb consumption at like a certain time so that we could just dose with the insulin and do one injection and minimize that. But now with the pump, it's a lot easier. And so we still, it's the pump is not self-sufficient. We still have to input information and tell it what to do. And so we're still carb counting and still entering that information in to give an accurate dose of insulin for him.
So this is, I think, the perspective that I want to make sure that everybody understands. So every day you, as Dawson's mom, has to be aware of what he's eating. And yes. then depending on what he's eating, you have to make sure. So Dawson goes to public school. He does have an aide that is with him. That aide is trained on his monitor and his pump. But there is a lot of communication that happens between the aide and you and the school every day because, you know, what happens when Dawson forgets his lunch?
Right.
Which happened this morning
yes.
that you told me. And so you said, what did you say to me when you said Dawson didn't have his backpack and Dawson didn't have his lunch? You said... He's not like a normal kid.
Right.
He can't just have hot lunch.
Right.
Because I wouldn't have the carb counts and I wouldn't know how to dose him, which is life or death for him. Mm-hmm. I think that's what people don't understand either, that like you don't get those carb counts right and you don't get that insulin right, then we're talking about way high or way low.
Right.
And you work with your doctors to make sure that you're in a safe place for him if he's too high, how you adjust that and that kind of stuff. But every day
for every meal. And he, you know, he's not like every other kid. We try to find all of the ways that he is like other kids because it is difficult to be different.
Right.
But I think that there's also a point where we can embrace that difference and be okay with it. And, you know, he's got a very healthy understanding of how to
yeah.
eat right for his body. He has an understanding of food that isn't typical for somebody his age.
Right, yeah, right.
So, I mean, those are all really great things. Those are all great qualities. But we have to monitor everything. He can't ever just go get food and eat it. We have to know what the carb count is. We have to enter it into his pump. We have to look at blood sugar and determine if it's a safe thing for him to have carbs at that point in time. I mean, it's a very delicate balance, and it takes a lot of forethought on my part.
Right.
But I also try really hard to let him do what the other kids do. So when he wants a snack, I try not to withhold that. You know, I try to find some way that he can still have a snack that works for what's going on. So an example is last night, his blood sugar was running higher than normal. and he wanted something that was a sweet treat. Mm-hmm. With high blood sugar, it's common to be hungry. And the reason being is that without enough insulin, your body, the cells can't take the carbs in. And the carbs are what give you energy. So if you're not, if there's not enough insulin and your blood sugar is high, you feel hungry because your cells are starving. They want something. Right, right. They want those carbs. So a little bit of peanut butter with some celery or some baby carrots. And he's, you know, pretty satisfied with that. Those are low carb snacks. He's a little bit picky about foods. Mm-hmm. So he's not super easygoing about everything. He doesn't do a lot of dairy and cheese and things like that. And those would be ideal because they're easy and they're pretty low in carb.
Right, right.
Well, not all dairy, but, you know, most cheeses and things like that. So, but anyways, we were able to find something that works that allows him to still have a snack and to still have what he is wanting and what everybody else is getting without it complicating his blood sugar issues even more.
Right. I think that that has been probably the big eye-opener for me in seeing you and your family with Dawson is that this, I mean, I have three kids and I don't have a chronic illness in my family, and I, you know, my kids can say, I don't want a sandwich today. And I'm, oh, okay, well, what do you want? You know, and we talk about that. I don't ever have to worry about the fact that they might die because they don't have the right insulin or they don't have the right food with the right insulin. But that's something that you guys deal with every day. And I think there's a lot of people who don't fully understand that with when you have a child with type 1, that there's always that concern that's always in the back of your mind. And then you go, you know, talk about how often do you guys go to the doctor to get tests done to see, like, what's that? Is it what's it called? Where you can see how his diabetes is
A1C.
Talk about that a little bit. And even at 7, how concerned you are about some of those numbers and what you guys are doing to with the doctors to help that. What is it? I mean, first explain that and then talk about, you know, what you guys have to do to have that number and also what you do to help that number.
Okay. So his A1C is going to be kind of a snapshot of what his blood sugar has been doing over the last 3 months. And so our endocrinologist appointments are every 3 months. So we go in and we have all of his pump information downloaded at the doctor's office so that they can take a look at what we've been doing. He wears a Dexcom, which is also a monitor that measures his blood sugar and sends it through a Bluetooth signal to our phones. So I monitor him remotely all day long, every single day. And, you know, you mentioned the, you know, fact that this is life or death with this disease. It's sometimes difficult to face that reality, but that is what the reality is that his blood sugar going too high or too low could end up being something that could harm him. And even cause death, which is it's scary. It's scary to deal with that and to face that. It was most difficult in the beginning when we would go to bed because there's that fear of what could happen while we're asleep. He's considered hypo unaware, so he does not actually feel his low blood sugars until they're dangerously low.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So the monitor does help with that because it gives us a snapshot of what his blood sugar is doing and it gives us a trend so we can know if it's dropping or if it's staying steady or rising or what, you know, whatever. So we can try to catch things before they're dangerous. Mm-hmm. But then we get all of that information to the doctor's office. And so then they use the trends that they're seeing and the numbers that they're seeing on their end to help us fine tune what his insulin dosages should be. He receives two types of insulin. One is a basal and one is a bolus. The basal insulin is kind of a background insulin and it runs 24 hours a day. And it's different amounts to help just keep his blood sugar numbers stable. Hmm. And then a bolus would be when we give an increased dose for covering food or carbs.
Okay.
So the doctor goes in and he takes a look at the information that is provided through the Dexcom. And then fine-tunes those insulin dosages for like what's running in the background. Just if we're seeing an increase in blood sugar at certain times a day, he can increase the amount of insulin that Dawson's getting or decrease if we're having a lot of lows. But I'm in communication with the doctor's office on a regular basis where I call in numbers and I give them information on what's going on so that we can make those changes and fine-tune all of it. The A1C is important because if the A1C is rising, then it means that he's having more high blood sugars, and we need to correct that by making sure he's getting enough insulin for his body.
Okay.
We aim for a goal for A1C, but we... you know, I try to be careful about it. I don't want that to be like a report card,
right?
Although that's what it feels like.
Right, right.
Because really, it's just a reflection of what his body is doing. It's not necessarily good or bad. As it gets higher, it's not safe. It could be harmful to his body, especially in the long run or the long term.
Right.
But as a, you know, on a monthly basis, or, you know, when we go in every 3 months, it's a good snapshot to help us know if we need to make changes. If it's rising, then we clearly need to add more insulin. And as it gets closer to the number that the doctor would like to see it at, then we know we're kind of where we need to be and can do what we can to try to maintain that and keep it at a safe level.
Mm-hmm.
It's common for that number to be higher at diagnosis. And then as you make these changes and you add insulin, that number should start to come down. And then when they grow, they have growth spurts.
Yeah, I was
going to
say,
because
that's the other thing that, or they get sick, or that can affect those things too. And he's constantly growing, just like all of our kids are. And so you have to factor that in, right?
Yeah. Well, and that's the interesting thing about it, is that insulin needs change regularly based on those types of things. Food is not the only thing that influences his blood sugar.
Right.
So our hormones drive our blood sugar in a lot of ways. Adrenaline especially. So when we have something exciting, it doesn't necessarily have to be something scary, but when we have something exciting, it's common to see a high blood sugar number for him. And that adrenaline actually causes a high, but then it will drastically drop. And so you just have to be very careful on how we dose them. Growth hormones, they change your blood sugar, and they will usually you'll see an increase in blood sugar while they're growing and those growth hormones are higher. At night is when growth hormones are typically at their peak. And so it's common to see really high blood sugars at night during those time frames. But it's so hard to pinpoint in a little person that is doing a lot of growing.
Right.
And illness definitely influences his blood sugar also. In different ways. Something like a virus that would cause a cold would cause higher blood sugars. And then when he gets some kind of a stomach bug, it changes the way his body absorbs the carbohydrates, which can cause low blood sugars. So it's, you know, just never know.
Right. Yeah. It's, yeah. And there's not, I know, just in some of the stuff that I know that you and I've talked about, it is, you wish there were days it was an exact science, and it's definitely, it's the exact opposite of that.
Correct.
And you try, and like you said, I know, you know, it feels like a report card, but he's a growing boy and a very active boy, and there's times when you're just not going to be able to adjust that. Okay, so one question I have for you that I probably didn't prepare you for, so I'm going to, you just answer however you want to. How do you pay for all this? Like, that has to be a huge struggle. I mean, I already have three kids and a husband, and insurance is so expensive, and you have stuff that you have to keep your child alive on a daily basis. How does that affect, you know, like, how do you do that?
So thankfully we have insurance through my husband's employer, and we always thought we had relatively good insurance until Dawson's diagnosis. Mm. And it's not that we don't have good insurance, but it's made me more aware of what our insurance really looks like. And probably this is the case for most families. For the normal stuff, like going to the doctor for an ear infection or things like that, the insurance works just fine. But when you're talking about a chronic illness that requires medication or treatments that are expensive, it can quickly feel out of hand. Dawson, you know, he requires insulin. Without the insulin, even just in a period of hours in a day, could be deadly.
Right.
So that was really overwhelming when we were diagnosed. We needed the insulin to leave the hospital, and we actually didn't have the money to cover it. And so we had to come up with some creative ways Thankfully, the hospital worked with us and we spoke with a social worker and were able to figure out what we could do just so that we had what we needed to leave and to keep his little body safe.
Mm-hmm.
Thankfully, through our state, we have supplemental insurance that's offered to families that have a child with chronic illness. It's not for all things, but thankfully type 1 is something that is covered.
Right.
And so it's a supplement. So what our insurance doesn't pick up, this other insurance does.
Okay.
And I know there's a lot of families out there that don't have that benefit. And it's really stressful. And in the groups that I'm involved in, that's a common thread, which is that somebody can't afford the insulin that they need. We've actually seen it with my own brother. A vial of insulin currently is close to $600 to have to purchase it. And so somebody that doesn't have good insurance or has a high deductible or things like that, they're having to find a way to pay for that out of pocket. We're so incredibly fortunate that we have the supplemental insurance because it does pick it all up for us.
Mm-hmm.
In the beginning, it didn't cover the extra things that we were starting to use. And so like his Dexcom, which is the continuous glucose monitor, and then his insulin pump were not things that were covered by that supplement. I worked really hard at trying to help the insurance company understand why it was so necessary for Dawson. And thankfully, they decided to go ahead and cover it for us.
A lot of prayer went into that one from our family, just so you know, and a lot of other people.
Yes.
Because we saw the benefit of it on a daily basis of what you guys had to do as a family to make sure that he was safe. So, yes, you worked really hard, and I don't want to take any of that away from you, but we in the Herb family rejoiced highly when we found out that that was approved and they didn't have to, you know, she didn't have to go through any more of that. So just on a personal note, that we prayed a lot. And, you know what? Every once in a while, Paul remembers that, and he still thanks Jesus for that pump for Dawson.
We are so thankful for it also. And it was such a difficult time, but it honestly, it's really helped us to see how God is at work and how he has provided for us, because we were specifically praying that the pump would be covered by our primary and by our supplemental insurance fully,
mm-hmm.
because the cost of it was very expensive, into the thousands of dollars.
Right.
And it's not just a one-time payment, because it has to get changed every 3 days, which I would say also probably that falls into that whole misconception. People don't understand that the pumps are changed out by the patient themselves. It's not something that the doctor does.
Right.
We actually do that procedure at home every 3 days. Mm. We change his pump, and there's like a little cannula that gets inserted in under his skin, and the pump then administers the insulin through that cannula. Same thing with the continuous glucose monitor. That's something that the patient is responsible for changing out every 7 to 10 days also. So when we were looking at the cost of those things, I was very overwhelmed by it because it was expensive. There was no way that we could possibly afford to pay that out of pocket. It was way bigger than what we felt like we could handle. And so through a lot of prayer, it's been covered and it's been approved and it's been affordable for us. But yeah, it's not that way for everybody. Mm-hmm. So there are a lot of people out there that may go without some of these necessary tools because financially they are not in a position to pay for them. And so it's a hard pill to swallow, because there is going to be a day that Dawson no longer qualifies for the supplemental insurance. And these may be things that we have to face, you know, like how he's going to afford these tools. And they're not optional, in my opinion. It was not spun that way to begin with. They kind of made it sound like these were like an extra. But when you're monitoring blood sugar and it is as you know, it fluctuates as much as it does for somebody with type 1 diabetes, it's important to be able to monitor that in order to have that A1C come in at a reasonable number. And to keep their blood sugar levels at a safe place.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. So let's talk about if you, from an outsider, kind of me looking in, there may be people listening to this MomCast that have friends, that have a child or even a family member that has type 1 diabetes. Mm-hmm. What are some things that families that surround you, what can they do to support you? What are some things that you would like people to think about your family or to think about Dawson that maybe, like you said already, but you know, that he can't have candy or, you know, that kind of thing. But what are some things that families who know someone who has type 1 diabetes would be able to do to support a family that does?
Well, definitely prayer. That's the one thing that I feel like we have been most aware of, is the fact that when blood sugar numbers are crazy, we ask for prayer. And, you know, I believe wholeheartedly that God is over all of those things and that he hears those prayers. We've seen him answer. We've seen times when Dawson's blood sugar was really high going into some activity that we were, you know, concerned about, and we've prayed about it and have watched those numbers kind of come into a nice stable range. So that, I would say, is a huge factor. Another thing that we really appreciated is, you know, when we go someplace, when people think about the fact that we need carb counts and things like that, saving packages when we have a family meal so that I have something to go off of and dose him, you know, supporting him by learning what things he can and cannot have, which there really isn't anything he can't have aside from the gluten.
Right.
But learning those kinds of things and being supportive of that, helping other people understand. It's kind of a difficult thing because I think sometimes it may be family by family or person by person, but you know, we were greatly blessed this past fall. The kids had some like Halloween party or something to go to, and the person that was taking care of it made sure that I had all of the information so that Dawson could fully participate, and made sure that there were gluten-free options for him. And it was just such a wonderful moment, and he was just beyond excited that he got to participate and do what everybody else was doing. It was just a really special moment and something that stands out to me. And just being patient with that whole process. It's, I mean, we're constantly having to pause to check blood sugars. Even though we have the continuous glucose monitor, it's not completely 100% accurate all the time, and there are times that we still have to test blood sugars or take a break because he's got a low blood sugar. And just to have that understanding and that you know, having somebody come beside you and recognize like all that we're doing and being supportive.
Well, and what I think of is, you know, there was, they couldn't, I think what you said about being aware of what, because not every kid who has type 1 is going to be gluten-free, but there are going to be things that you know that that child likes that are going to be better for them than other things. And so I think thinking about that, but also, you know, in your case, you have three other kids. And with Dawson, there are, and there were, especially in the beginning, a lot of doctor's appointments. And I know that many times you took all four kids with you. And that is a nightmare to me, just like taking all three of my little kids to the grocery store when they were young. But I think offering something like that, you know, because I know for you, you shared with me that it has been tough to trust people with Dawson's care. And this was a lot of it too, was before we had, you had the monitor as well. But you can't just like get a babysitter and go on a date night, because your person that you have watching all four of your kids has to be trained and has to understand what to be watching for and how to test Dawson and that kind of, you know, what to give him. And I know the couple times that you, you know, trained me in that, you would say, well, if it's this, you want to give him this. And you wrote all that down for me. But I think even just for doctor's appointments during the summer, like saying, hey, I'd love to take your other kids so you can go to this doctor's appointment just with your child and not have to take everybody. Do you find that because there is so much more, that you still feel like you can't like ask for help, or that you are, it's hard for you to ask for help, not for Dawson necessarily, but with other aspects of your life, knowing all that you carry on a daily basis with Dawson, do you still find it hard to say, sure, you can take my kids, or sure, you can. You're shaking your head. They can't see that, but you're shaking your head. Why is that? Why do you think that is?
Oh, I don't know if I have a good answer for why it's difficult to ask for help, but
because I think anyone listening would say, if anybody has asked for help, it's you. Because of all that you're carrying, you do work part-time. You do have three other kids, one who's a teenager, and I have two teenagers, so Lord help us. But why do you think, with everything that you deal with, why you're not willing to not only ask for help, but accept help from other people who are willing to help you?
I think some of it comes from guilt, because it's such a balance with trying to manage and handle everything. And so it's hard to take time, especially for myself, or to recognize that there's a need there, because I'm so tuned into everybody else's needs. Mm-hmm. And so since Dawson's diagnosis, the other kids have had more needs. I think that it's been difficult for them to watch their brother go through this. Mm-hmm. I think that, I mean, it's been 2.5 years now, so it's not been a lot of time, but it's been enough time that we've kind of settled into this way of life, and it doesn't feel so difficult. I mean, there are still a lot of difficult aspects, but we're you know, accustomed to them.
You hit a rhythm. You kind of hit a rhythm as a family. I understand that.
And so it's gotten to a point, though, where, like, the other kids' needs that come up, especially because he is kind of the center of attention. His needs are more immediate, and so sometimes they get put on the back burner. And, then when I'm trying to find that balance, it's making sure that I'm taking care of what they need also. And so I think sometimes my needs get pushed aside, and I don't always take time to recognize what those are, to make sure that they're being met and cared for also. So I think that when it comes to asking for help, a lot of times that help is easier to ask for when it's for one of my people instead of it being for me.
Right.
But I see the value, and I know that it's important to take care of myself also, and my marriage, and those things, you know, ultimately they kind of set the tone for everything else. And right. So I think I'm trying to be more aware of it. And, you know, through your prompting, I may try to ask for help and reach out a little bit more.
Right.
But it's, yeah, I mean, it's definitely not easy. And especially because there are so many needs right now in our household.
Mm-hmm. Which is where, I mean, I think the thing that I think about, though, is that, yeah, in all three of my kids, we have a joke in our family that when I give someone something that they really want, the other two are like, well, why did he get that and I didn't? I'm like, well, clearly I love him more than I do, or than I do you, you know? And so that's a joke in our family. And it, of course, it's not true if any of my kids are listening. But, you know, I think the thing that I look at in your family is when it comes to Dawson, like, if he is low and you've got a kid, another kid in your family who's having a total meltdown tantrum over something, you cannot deal with the meltdown tantrum. You have to deal with the low blood sugar, because he could die. Like, and I know you and I've talked about the fact that, like, we pray and we know that God has amazing plans for Dawson's life and that God has him, but still ultimately you as his mom still feel responsible for that. And so if you were to take care of the girl in your house throwing a tantrum over the fact that she doesn't have what she wants to wear and Dawson's low, you can't deal with that. You can't deal with your girl who doesn't know what she wants to wear. You have to deal with the low, because it's life or death. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't deal with that, Rachel. I don't deal with that on a daily basis. Like, I'll just tell them all to be quiet and quit it, you know, and nobody's going to die. Right. You know what I mean? And you may think that I'm being dramatic or that we're being dramatic, but if you were to live in a type 1 diabetes parent's house, you would understand that you are ever vigilant. Is that correct? You're always, I mean, even during this interview, I'm assuming that you are getting texts from your aide at the school asking what she should do for Dawson in a snack or something like that. So while I'm talking, she's texting, because that's how constant it is. Mm-hmm. Because you always have to be on top of it, and you see the doctor, and then you communicate that to the teachers and to the aides. But it isn't dramatic. Like with type 1, the way that this works with insulin in the body, which I had no idea how amazing my body was that it just does that for me. Seriously, like I was like, wow, really? Like that's what your body does? Because we've obviously talked about this before, but that is how hypervigilant you have to be. So I think it's understandable for you to feel guilty when it comes to some of your other, I mean, I think a lot of moms would say, well, I feel guilty and I don't even have a kid with chronic illness. So anything else that you'd like people to know about type one or that, you know, that kind of what, you know, again, I know that, and we can put links in this too. There's the Juvenile Diabetes Foundation. You guys have been a part of that. Anything else you'd want people to know that you'd want to share about type one?
Well, I think one thought that came up is that World Diabetes Day is November 14th, and that is the day that Dr. Banting, who was the person that discovered insulin and its therapeutic benefits for diabetes, that's his birthday. And so we celebrate that day, and it, you know, it's kind of a tricky way of celebrating because I think some people would look at it and kind of wonder what there is to celebrate about type 1 diabetes. Mm-hmm. But we do celebrate Dawson's day of diagnosis as one more year that he has been a warrior through all of this, that he's been very strong, and he's been so brave through all of the finger pokes and the pump changes and the Dexcom changes and the injections. And, you know, we really try to build him up and help him realize how strong he really is. And I think that it's great to have other people support that and to also recognize what people in the type 1 community go through as caregivers, as siblings, and as the patient themselves. There's a lot of sacrifice that goes on behind the scenes that most people don't have any awareness of because so much of it can be monitored and controlled without it being something that other people see.
Right.
There's a lot that happens that you would never be aware of. And there's been many a times, I'm sure, that you've sat in the same room with a type 1, maybe had a meal with them or something and never realized the times that they've, you know, taken out a pump to dose insulin and have done those things, or the times that they've had to look at their plate and try to calculate carbs based on what information they have so that they can do that. And I think that to have that awareness and that recognition for them and support them, it's a big deal. So we are asking our family and friends and the people who are part of Dawson's life to wear blue on November 14th as a way to support him and his journey. And I think the other thing with type 1 that would be helpful for people to know is that that you understand like what they're going through, to have some validation to the fact that this is a difficult journey. So many of them walk through this life with their braveness and their game face on, and they do what they have to do, and most people are completely unaware of the battles that they face. And it's lifelong, that there's a longevity to this. Like we have to be able to persevere and endure through all of this. And he's going to do this for the rest of his life until there's a cure found, which I have tremendous hope will come someday in his lifetime. So if you are praying for somebody with type 1, you can pray that there is a cure and that there will be a day that managing it isn't quite so stressful and that there isn't fear in the parent's mind about their little one maybe not waking up in the morning because of a blood sugar episode that was detrimental.
Right. Cool. Well, thank you so much for sharing your story with us. Well done. And I appreciate you just being willing to share where you guys are at. So
thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.